Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, September 30th. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today, and we welcome back veterinarian Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital to answer your questions about your doggy, your kitty, another pet. No armadillos or anything. That's off the table today. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin and your pet calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hi again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today, and here to take your calls is Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital in Del Mar, New York, a USDA Category 1 accredited veterinarian. Dr. O'Loughlin is a grad of Cornell. She joined the Del Mar Animal Hospital staff in 1998. If you have a question, call early. These shows tend to get a little crowded. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And if you're sending an email, try to keep it brief, but make sure it's complete. Include the age and sex of your pet when you're putting that paragraph together for us. And again, the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. The number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, how you doing?
Hey, Ray, I'm good. How are you?
Well, it's great to have you back on the show. Would this be a time that we should be watching out for ticks on our pets?
Oh, absolutely. Fall is one of the highest feeding times for ticks. The adults are looking for a nice warm body to get a blood meal. Sounds lovely, but that's what they're out
right
to do. So, I mean, the one thing people need to realize, though, is ticks don't go away in the Northeast. Even in the winter, they just kind of find a warm spot next to a building to burrow in. But any day it gets pretty much above freezing, certainly 40 degrees and above, which it often does all winter nowadays,
yep,
the ticks will be out. So I've had animals in my office in February with ticks on them.
You know, you're right.
You really can't let your guard down.
And the weather, I mean, you can't predict, obviously, too far in advance, but because of the currents in the Pacific, I think it's a La Nina year, it may be that we have a more mild winter. At least
right,
that's my hope.
Yep.
All right, this email came in from, I don't know who it came in from. Oh, Bill in the Berkshires. Bill writes, my cat is now being treated for feline small cell lymphoma with both prednisolone and chlorambucil since July and is doing quite well, gained most weight back, etc., doing remarkably well. How long do cats treated for this disease generally live? And that's from Bill in the Berkshires.
Well, he doesn't say where the lymphoma was.
No.
So, you know, there's different forms of lymphoma that have varying degrees of prognosis of how long they're going to do.
Yeah.
Some cats, if it's intestinal lymphoma, I've had some cats go quite a long period of time, just with the drugs that he mentioned, the chlorambucil and the prednisolone. Other cats with lymphoma, you know, a lot of times you're talking 6 to 9 months, maybe a year. But I've had some cats with the sort of low-grade intestinal lymphoma go several years.
Interesting. Now, I would imagine for the pet owner who might bring their pet in once a year for a checkup, finding intestinal lymphoma might be a tricky thing to do.
It is, because there's also another disease that's very similar and very common called inflammatory bowel disease, where the cat or dog's bowel becomes filled with inflammatory cells because their immune system is responding to something. And sometimes with severe inflammatory bowel disease, even pathologists will disagree whether it's inflammatory bowel disease or lymphoma, because they can look very similar. So a lot of times with severe disease, we end up treating them with chemotherapy, whether they have cancer or not.
And there is no simple and not too invasive way to do a biopsy and check it out?
Not really, no. You can do endoscopic biopsies where they stick a tube down the animal's throat.
Yep.
The problem with that is you can only get so far down the intestinal tract.
Right.
And often it's farther down than you can reach. Also, the samples you get that way are not what are called full thickness. So you can get a surface sample and miss a diagnosis.
We are joined today by Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital. It's Pets and Vets today. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And let's go to Patrick in Beech Lake, Pennsylvania. Patrick.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Right. You're on.
So originally I had a question about a vet, but I'm going to change it only because it doesn't make sense. So
okay.
My different question is, I have a Shetland sheepdog, and she's a female. Her name's Pippi.
Okay.
I'm just wondering, why do Shetland sheepdogs' breaths always smell bad?
Ah, okay. Well, that's a fine question. Dr. O'Loughlin.
Well, I would say my first thought would be her teeth. I would say Shelties, as a breed, often have pretty bad dental health. We have some Shelties that come into my office that have to get their teeth cleaned every year without fail, where a lot of dogs can go years and years without needing a cleaning, if ever. So my first thing would be to have her teeth checked. If her teeth are okay, then bad breath often comes from down below. In other words, they're sort of burping up bad stomach smells. And I will often, in that case, recommend that owners maybe consider a diet change. There may be something in the diet that's just not sitting right and making the dog a little extra gassy and burpy, and giving them the bad breath.
Patrick.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. We appreciate it very much. The number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is here. It's Pets and Vets. More of your calls and emails coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, and we have Carrie O'Loughlin here from Del Mar Animal Hospital to answer your pet and vet questions. Although, you know, she's a vet. I don't know if you have to ask any questions about vets, but pets certainly. This email came in from Suzanne in Albany. Suzanne writes, "My dog's a male 3-year-old German Shepherd. Recently started acting aggressively at the dog park. He used to frolic like crazy at the park. We never had problems. Now, mostly because he's big, other dogs try to jump all over him until he growls at them to back off, and then it gets nasty. But sometimes he is seeming to be the aggressor. I started reading a lot of articles to dig into this behavior, and I'm learning that about half of all dogs are not dog park dogs. They don't like it. It's overstimulating. I'm coming to terms with my dog not being a dog park dog, and I'm fine keeping him away because it's safer. But does this mean I have an unfriendly dog? How common is it for dogs to not do well at the dog park? How do you feel about dog parks? Can he still play one with other?" That's a long, email. I think you get the gist. Go ahead.
I do. So a couple of things that come to mind. One, the dog is 3. And a lot of times what happens is they sort of reach social maturity sometime between 2 and 3 years old, where before they might have been a little more easygoing. Sometimes they start feeling their oats and feeling like, all right, now I'm the boss and I'm not going to let you tell me what to do kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he's a German Shepherd. German Shepherds, unfortunately, especially in America, have been poorly bred a lot of times. Tend to be somewhat fearful. So they don't always do well in social situations. So the more that they can be socialized, the more they can, you know, maybe smaller groups, not so much of this crazy aggressive, you know, dog play
yeah.
with a bunch of dogs, but maybe one-on-one with another friend in the backyard somewhere. And let him get used to some good social play that's not too, as she said, overstimulating. Okay. Would probably be the best thing.
All right, two more email messages, and then to the phones we will go. The number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest. And this one's from Aaron in Rensselaer. I have a 16-year-old male cat. I don't know the breed. On occasion, he will, for lack of a better word, dig in the toilet, in the water, splashing it all over the place, making a mess of the bathroom. The toilet's clean, but is this normal behavior? I've never seen anything like this when he was younger, but a few months ago, we did get another cat who is significantly younger and female. Could this have anything to do with it? That's from Aaron.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it has anything to do with the new cat. He may be, you know, that's an odd one. I, as a new behavior, I've certainly had some cats who like to play with their water dish.
Yeah.
I had a cat that we got one of those, wasn't an automatic waterer, but it had a big bottle attached to it. So it would, as they drank, it would fill the bowl.
Yeah.
And I had to get rid of it because she would dig the water out and I'd have a lake because she would empty the water bottle. So some cats just like to play in water. I don't know why this cat would develop that new behavior at 16.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the younger cat is making him feel a little younger and spryer and he's kind of feeling his oats. I'm not sure.
Okay. At 16, I mean, the cat could go a little senile by 16, right?
Yeah, they could. I tend to think of more 18, 19-year-olds with the senility, but I suppose at 16 he could be.
All right. This is the final email, and then we'll get to the phones. This is from Chris in Cornwall. We are inheriting a 16-year-old female Maine Coon who has been fed cheap brand name dry kibble her entire life. She seems to be in fairly good health for her age. Should we even try to feed her a more healthy diet at this point, or should we just continue to feed her what she's accustomed to and happy with? Great question from Chris in Cornwall.
Well, I would certainly say initially I would not make any major changes. You know, she's going to be going through a stressful change in a new home. You don't want them going on a fast because they're stressed out and you're trying to introduce a new diet.
Right.
But it wouldn't hurt once she's settled to try and introduce some canned food because, you know, at 16, she's, you know, medium old. But you know, as she gets into her couple of later years, it wouldn't be a bad idea to have some more wet food in her diet. So I would slowly introduce some food, but I wouldn't make any major changes right off of that.
All right. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, our guest today on this Pets and Vets edition of Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. Anne in Rexford. Anne, you're up.
Hi, Ray and Dr. O'Loughlin. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
You bet.
During
no
the
problem.
Shutdown, we had, excuse me?
Go ahead.
We had a stray kitten show up at our house, which is a fun thing, and he's part of our household now. He had the upper respiratory infection because he hadn't been cared for as a stray, and he's seen two vets. The first vet didn't give him an antibiotic the first time, but then I asked, so they gave him amoxicillin, and we went through that cycle, and then he wasn't a whole lot better, and I brought him to a cat specialist, and I think it was maybe doxycycline, another antibiotic, and an immune support supplement, and also probiotics, and a warming, and he's still struggling, and I feel so bad for this little cat. He just, you know, he's sneezing, and he's congested, and he's got discharge, and we have two other cats. They were inoculated before he came, and so they never got it, which is great. They're older, but I don't know if there's anything else we can do for him. I just wish we could.
So he has a lot of mucusy discharge?
It's not super mucusy. It's dry. It's like the tail stages of a cold for a human, you know, but he sneezes and it's kind of thick and, you know, it's gross. It gets on things like your chair or your arm or, anyway.
You so it's,
picture,
not,
I guess.
It's not an absolutely clear liquid though. It's got some.
No, it's not.
Okay.
It has
okay.
white blood cells in it. Yep.
Okay. So, you know, kittens certainly can get a, you know, most colds in cats are viral, but kittens especially are a little more prone to getting secondary bacterial infections. The doxycycline is usually one of the best antibiotics for that. There are a couple of different antibiotics that could be tried that haven't been tried yet. The other thing is basically steam therapy. Have you been doing any of that in
No, I haven't.
So you can either you can use a vaporizer, just a you don't want a hot vaporizer, but a cold water vaporizer, and you put him in a cat carrier, cover the vaporizer and the carrier with a big blanket and make like a steam tent for him to breathe that humidified air. Or if you don't have a vaporizer, you can just fill your bathroom with steamy air. Just, you know, run the hot, the shower, get that bathroom nice and steamy and have the kitten sit in there for about 10 minutes. It just helps loosen up that stuff so that he can clear it out of his sinuses.
Okay.
Okay. And do you, you know, based on what I'm describing, would you think this is maybe a secondary bacterial
infection? It could be just a little bit. It could be a little lingering. You know, if he's had a couple of good rounds of antibiotics, you know, sometimes antibiotics aren't going to fix it at that point. It's kind of up to his immune system, him getting a little older and helping to sort of clear the passages with the steam. We do, unfortunately, have some cats that will go on to develop chronic sinusitis, where they get this sort of chronic inflammatory thing in their nose, and they're always going to have some sneezing throughout their life. But how old is this kitten at this point?
We just lost her, Dr. O'Loughlin.
Ah, okay. All right. I was going to say, if he's still tiny, it's, you know, early enough that he could outgrow it. If he's, you know, 6 months or 7 months, he might be heading into the chronic sinusitis stage.
Well, let's go to Keith in East Greenbush. Keith, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 10-week-old female Labrador puppy. And she's just kind of bitey. I mean, the normal puppies chewing are kind of, I haven't had a puppy in 25 years, but this one seems a little more than I'm used to and with a little attitude. So.
All right. Bitey.
Yeah. So I call this the terrible twos of puppyhood. They definitely go through a stage where they think everything is a chew toy, including you. And what you need to do is just like you would train her, you don't want to go to the bathroom in the house, you need to train her that chewing on you is not appropriate behavior. So as soon as she puts her mouth on you, it's a quick, and then stick a chew toy in her mouth and praise her. Say, good girl. If she starts to bite on you and you give her a reprimand and she lets go, praise her as soon as she does it. She needs to learn that, you know, biting is not a good thing. It is a phase. It's definitely something they go through between 10 and 12, maybe 14 weeks. And then they generally outgrow it. But a little, you know, help along with some proper training will help.
I'm no expert on operant conditioning by any means. But if you give a dog, a little puppy who's biting you, a chew toy immediately, isn't that somehow giving a little reward for doing that?
No, well, except they need to learn, they want to put their mouth on something. So they just need to learn the appropriate thing to put their mouth on.
Okay.
If you want to be bitey, you need to go get one of your chew toys.
Keith.
So it's just teaching them what they're going to put their mouth on. You can't stop them from wanting to bite things.
Yeah.
That's just part of where they are in life. And Labradors especially love to carry things around in their mouth, so.
Well, she has about 22 chew toys at this point, but she spent about 5 seconds with one. So,
all right. Well, good luck.
Also, how about flea and tick protection for a puppy? I know it can be kind of tricky, but she's starting to have a little bug here and there, and I had a tick on me 2 days ago with her on my lap.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's certainly old enough. Most of the flea and tick medications are 8 weeks and up. So your vet should be able to get her started on that. So I would definitely get that done ASAP.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Keith, thank
you. You're welcome.
Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest. It's Pets at Vets today on Vox Pop. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Terry in Ashford, Connecticut. Terry.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Do I need to repeat my question?
Oh, you should. You're on the air now.
Oh, okay. I have a 4-year-old Australian Shepherd that has been very healthy right along. And in the last less than a week, he's developed a spot on his left forepaw that he's licked and licked and licked. I can't see anything on it like an infection or a bite, but it's getting to the point where, yeah, he's worn out the hair a little bit, and now it's starting to look a little raw. Anything I can put on that to keep him from licking it?
All right.
Yeah, I mean, the question with those is what started it. You know, and a lot of times you don't know. I mean, could it have been a bug bite? Could it have been he got a thorn in there or something like that? So I would start with if you can get a combination of a little antibiotic with maybe a little cortisone to stop the irritation. The other thing that sometimes is it moist? Is it kind of wet?
It's only wet from his licking.
Okay. Because sometimes, honestly, a little gold bond powder is very soothing. It dries it up and it helps with the soothing. But, you know, you got to keep his tongue off of it. So that's always the hard part. I guess I would try something with a little cortisone and see if that doesn't solve it. If it's not, he won't leave it alone, then the next step would be to visit your vet to see if there's something else going on.
Is there a problem with him ingesting the cortisone?
No. It's just like giving it orally. Most of those things are okay if they lick them off.
Just over-the-counter cortisone?
Yep.
All right. And the spot itself does not seem to be expressing anything except an urgency for him to lick it.
It's just red, right?
Yep. Yeah.
I would like to see if you do the cortisone, it should really start to calm down in 24 to 48 hours. If it's not at all, then he should be seen by someone.
All right, Terry, thank you so much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Always great when Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin joins us for a Pets and Vets edition. Let's go to Linda in Lanesboro. Hello, Linda.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have rescued a coonhound who's 2.5 to 3 years old, and lately he's been doing a lot of unstoppable barking when he's in a car. And I would take any suggestions that you may have of things we should try. He doesn't even seem to be barking at anything. He lays down and barks, he sits up and barks, but it's a lot of barking.
That's weird.
Huh. I mean, coonhounds are fairly vocal dogs. I guess you could do something as simple as trying some Benadryl before you take him in the car, just to sort of take the edge off.
Okay.
You know, Benadryl.
Even if I'm taking him for a hike, will he be okay then to go for? I'm usually taking him out for a hike in the woods or coming back. I could give it to him, but would he be okay if he had it right before a hike?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make him dopey. It just sort of takes the edge off. You know, he would take a milligram per pound. So if he's a 75-pound coonhound, he would take 3 Benadryl.
Okay.
The other thing non-medically would be to try maybe a super high-value treat. Like if you could get a Kong toy and stuff it full of, you know, frozen peanut butter, or give him something to distract him so he's so busy with the toy that he doesn't pay attention to his surroundings.
Okay. All right. I will try both.
Would you suggest
liquid or the pill Benadryl?
Usually for a dog that big, I would go with the pill because the liquid is, you'd be giving him a lot of volume.
All right, Linda, I have a question
for
you.
Sure.
How's the muffler? I'm not joking. How's the muffler in your car?
It's a quiet Subaru.
Okay, all right.
You think he might be hearing something? Probably hearing something I'm not hearing.
Well, I mean, years ago when I was a kid, we had a Siamese cat. And every time we put that cat in the car to go to the vet, it made the most insane noises. And it was something about the vibration or the sound, and we never pinpointed it, that just set her off. And I wonder if dogs have the same issue sometimes.
That's a good point, too.
Maybe one of those comfort blankets they do for the fireworks, those.
Oh, the thunder shirts.
Yeah, one of those, maybe.
Thunder shirt.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, I'll try anything because I've tried going from letting him ride in the hatch in the back. Now he's in a hammock with a seatbelt. I thought maybe he wanted to be up front more. I mean, he does want to be in the driver's seat, but that's never going to happen.
Yeah, have you tried letting him drive? I think that's all right. Well, thank you, Linda.
I think that's what he really wants. Okay, thank you very much.
Very
Bye-bye.
Good. Appreciate the call. I mean, is that possible, Dr. O'Loughlin, that the vibrations
possible.
Of the noise?
I mean, it'd be interesting if you kind of stuff some cotton in his ears to see if it made a difference.
Now, would you recommend doing that? I mean, have you ever done anything like that, putting cotton in a pet's ears?
No.
It's probably not a wise thing to do, right?
Well, I mean, if you're just trying to keep some of the noise out, you're not going to hurt them by putting a little cotton in there as long as you take it out.
You've had a lot of pets. I mean, and you've traveled with them. Have there been some that are fine driving and then some that are not?
I've been very lucky. I have yet to have a dog that doesn't like to ride in the car.
Yeah, most dogs
Our last two dogs would fall asleep instantly as soon as we put them in the car. But I've never had a dog that got car sick, thank goodness. I've never had a dog that is, you know, crazy in the car. So
interesting. What about cats?
I guess
cats?
I've just been lucky. Thankfully, I haven't had to travel too much with my cats.
Well, that's a good point.
They do tend to be a little talkative.
Yeah, they can do that. Yeah, the number here is 800-348-2551. If you at home are feeling talkative, Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest. Donna May is in Massachusetts. Go ahead.
Hello, Dr. Carrie. Thank you for taking my call.
No problem.
I have never owned a house cat ever. And I've been looking at the Carillion bobtail breed, and I want to know if it's true that a house cat can be toilet trained instead of litter box trained.
Come on. Really?
Yes, it is true. They make I don't know if you have to buy a special thing, but you basically it's like plastic wrap that you put under the toilet seat, and then you put litter in there, and that teaches them to squat into the toilet bowl. No. And then you can, because of course they like to scratch cover, a lot of cats can even be taught to flush.
Oh, come on.
So yes, you can teach your cat to use a toilet bowl.
Their own business.
Say it again.
They can flush their own business.
Well, according to Dr. O'Loughlin,
they can potentially, yes, be trained to do that.
Do you know about the Carillion bobtail?
I've never attempted it, so I can't give you that much information, but I have heard about it, and I've seen pictures.
Well, I've seen pictures of Bigfoot, but I'm still not sure that it exists, you know? Donna May, you want to follow up before we take a break?
Thank you so much.
All right, you good? All right, let's take a break then. Well, what a surreal program we have here. 800-348-2551. Never a dull moment when Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin's in the house. We'll be right back. Vox Pop, Pets and Vets Today. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin joins us. I'm Ray Graff. The number is 800-348-2551. If you have a question about your pet, and we still have some time left on this program, Jan, or is it Jan in Dover Plains? You're on.
No, it's Janet.
Hi, Jan, you're on.
I have an approximately two-year-old male cat who wandered in and out all last summer. We think we know where he came from, but we're not too sure. But he really bonded with my husband, except in the last week. All he has wanted to do is go out, and sometimes he's been gone for over 2.5 days. And I wonder if there are any residual feelings that male cats can have. I think he might be going back to the feral colony down the road and hanging out with them if there's a female in heat.
Well, probably not right now. There shouldn't be too many females in heat because it's the wrong time of year. As the days get shorter, cats stop going into heat. Now, it could be he's wherever he came from, his old neighborhood, he could be going back and visiting there. That's for sure. Yeah. I've seen cats do that. So it's hard to say, but is he neutered or is he still a tomcat?
Yeah. Oh, no, no. He's been neutered.
Okay. Yeah, then females wouldn't.
I had a neutered cat decades ago who was madly in love with this female across the street, and she was altered, and he would get into fights over her.
Wow.
With other cats, and I wonder if the same is going on now.
Well, maybe it was platonic, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think cats can have a pretty big...
Together. So cute.
Yeah,
ahead, Doc.
But cats can have a pretty big territory if they're outdoors. So he may just be cruising around his territory. And he may just be used to, you know, going on walkabouts.
Huh. Well, that's a good one,
yeah,
Jen.
Yeah, well, we kept him in last night because he dropped in Sunday night and ate and then left. But we kept him in last night because it was really storming down here. But my husband's really bonded with him. I don't think he wants him to move out. So we're tempted to make him an indoor cat, but I don't know yet. But I thought I'd ask if it's a possibility.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Jan. We appreciate the call. All right, follow-up here, Dr. O'Loughlin, from our friend Laura, who writes in, cat using toilet. My father did teach our tiger cat to use the toilet. He even used the toilet at my aunt's house when she had to cat sit. We took him to a cabin in Lake Placid once. He howled and ran around the rafters for a few hours before he would use the unfamiliar toilet, but he finally did. But no, we never did teach him to flush. I think he was always embarrassed when we walked in and found his business. And that's from Laura. You see? All right.
See, so it can be done, Ray.
All right, I'm still skeptical. Let's go to Julie in South Glens Falls. Julie.
Hi.
Hi.
So, I have a dog who will not ride in the car also.
Yeah.
And I have resorted to wearing earplugs myself. And that works really well. Then I can stop with him. So, he's 14. It's a little Yorkie. He can't see well anymore. He can't hear well anymore. When we let him outside, he just barks incessantly in the yard. And we can't, like, let the neighbors have to listen to that for too long. So, we bring him in pretty quick. But any suggestions for, you know, he has a big backyard that's fenced in, but we can't just let him out to bark.
Hmm. Yeah, it's tough when a lot of times when dogs start to lose their hearing and their sight, they do tend to get a little more barky because I think they're just like getting little bits and pieces of that information that normally would have told them exactly what's going on out in the backyard. And since they can't quite make out what it is, they just start going, hey, what's that? Whoa, what's that? What's that? And I don't have a great fix for it, unfortunately. You know, besides going out in the yard with him, you know,
right,
and walking him around the yard and trying to let him know it's okay that, you know, this is just the grass and the wind and the trees and everything's okay. But yeah, that is a tough one, unfortunately.
Yeah. That's a great idea though. Thank you.
Thanks, Julie. We appreciate the call. 800-348-2551. If you want to ask Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin a question on this Pets and Vets edition of Vox Pop, Kelly in Schenectady. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Nice to have you here.
I have a 10-month-old golden retriever puppy, and he's been regurgitating his food for months now. And when he's done with his meal, it's when he regurgitates it, and he swallows it, and he just swallows it. But Monday, he vomited it back out onto the floor. So I said, hey, I'm going to take him to the vet and see what's going on. And the vet gave him a barium in his food and x-rayed him every hour, and he found stones in his stomach and was concerned that, you know, that would cause an obstruction. Today, he x-rayed them, and luckily, the stones have moved out. Now, we're not sure if the stones are due to the regurgitation or if the regurgitation is due to something else. Do you have any ideas about that?
Well, you know, certainly if he had rocks in his stomach, I could see that causing him to vomit. The big question is vomiting versus regurgitation. So when he brings food back up, prior to the food coming back up, does he actually retch? Is it like retch, and then he throws up? Or does he just sort of open his mouth and the food comes out?
No, what happens is usually at the end of his meal, he brings back up the food, and it doesn't come out of his mouth. He catches it in his mouth, and he swallows it. Except that this Monday, he threw it up.
Mm.
He usually just swallows it right back down. It doesn't come out of his mouth.
Hmm. Because it almost sounds like the food isn't getting all the way to his stomach. So regurgitation, the food hasn't actually made it to his stomach yet. It's still sort of in his esophagus. So those dogs don't retch. They just, you know, the food just comes back up very silently.
Right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, so the esophagus looked okay on the barium?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I mean, one thing to try, I mean, because even if his esophagus looked normal, if he's been doing this fairly regularly, would be to feed him with his front end raised up.
What?
So basically, you could put his food on like a step stool where he's got to stand on the step and eat his food so that basically gravity helps get the food down.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you can actually have him stay that like that, or even you just stand there and like hold his feet up in the air so he's sort of standing on his back feet for a few minutes to make sure the food gets in his stomach. You know, this could be a functional thing where the food's not getting down into his stomach appropriately. You know, it sometimes takes more imaging to figure this out, you know, either looking down his throat with the endoscope or doing something called fluoroscopy, where it's sort of a motion picture x-ray where they can watch him swallow. Those are usually done at specialty practices, which there are several in this area. And they can watch the motion and make sure that the muscles are working appropriately to get the food down into the stomach.
Well, Kelly, thanks a lot for the call. Go ahead, finish that up.
Those are options.
All right, our number here is 800-348-2551. And Megan in Albany, you're on.
Hi. I have a question regarding my 8-year-old cat.
Okay.
It's a male, and he is very friendly, etc. I do want to bring another cat into the home, and that cat is not a kitten. It's around a year old. I want to know how Oscar is going to integrate, if that's going to be a very stressful situation. Is there anything I can do to relieve any of that stress?
Couple of questions. The cat you're introducing is a male or female?
It's a female.
Okay. The reason I ask, I personally find that male cats in general tend to be more accepting of new cats, where females are a little tougher.
Okay.
So the question is, is it going to be more of the female having the problem than your male? Now, young cats are often, you know, more forgiving. It doesn't mean an 8-year-old can't accept a new cat. There are certainly things you can do. You know, you certainly want to make sure they each have their own space when you first bring the cat into the house. Don't try and force them to be together. Just introduce them slowly. You can exchange odors by, like, taking a towel and wiping the one cat with the towel and then bringing it to the other cat so they can, and then vice versa, so they can smell each other's smell without being right next to each other. There's, of course, okay. Feel Away, which is the spray or diffusers that have the happy scent of cats. You could, you know, okay. treat the house with Feel Away. There's also...
Would you advise... go ahead.
No. What were you going to ask?
Oh, would you advise shutting the cats in separate rooms initially, or just let them freely, you know, go about acclimating themselves?
What I usually recommend is the newcomer I would put in a room. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for them coming okay. into a new space, you know, starting off small and getting used to the smells of the house and, you know, getting them situated okay. and then slowly allowing them more and more freedom into the house. There's also okay. Jackson Galaxy, who is a fellow who does the he's on Animal Planet. He does a show, My Cat from Hell, on Animal Planet. He has some really good videos on his website, and I know one of them is introducing new cats. So you can always go on to his website and okay. check that out.
All right.
What?
Hello?
Oh.
We lost her. Just a quick question about this feel away stuff. What is that, pheromones?
Yes.
Why can't they do this with people? In other words, why can't you spray it around a house and everybody... The debate last night, spray the whole room and then everybody gets along, right?
I think that's called whiskey.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that does work, too, for a time. Marianne in Durham. Marianne, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I rescued a female cat. She's about 6 years old. She lives on my back porch, and all of a sudden a feral appeared about 4 or 5. Is very friendly with me and is now terrorizing the other cat. She has since moved to my front porch. I really don't want to have to be having cats in two different places, especially with the winter coming, but I don't know what to do. She's not very happy, and I think she's afraid of this cat, who is lovely, but not to her.
All right, you dropped out a little bit there, Marianne, but Dr. O'Loughlin, did you catch all that?
So I take it she's got two sort of feral cats living outside her house, and they're not getting along.
Oh, Marianne, I think you're in a bad spot. We'll try it one more time. We lost you again, Marianne. Try it. Try a very quick hit here, and then we'll see if we can get you an answer.
Okay, so I have a rescue cat who's lived on my porch, and a feral cat appeared. And she first didn't like him, but now he's kind of the dominant cat. And she has moved to the front porch, and he's in the back. And I'm wondering how I can get them together, because they are outdoor cats.
Okay.
I guess I would have to go back to Feel Away. I would try spraying some Feel Away around. You know, they may never love each other. It's tough. But that would be one of the best things to try. And, you know, they may need to be somewhat separated for a while until they learn how to get along. It's tough with outdoor cats. You don't know their backgrounds and all that. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would say Feel Away okay. and all the areas that you can spray that they're around.
All right, Marianne, thanks very much for sticking with us there and getting that question in. Evie in Gloversville, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Doctor.
Hi.
We got our golden doodle, her name is Gracie. About 3 years ago, she was rescued from the sheriff raided a puppy mill and took 20 dogs, and Gracie was given to us. And she's really a great dog, and she's just so part of the family. She's like a little person, and she's really cute. So, but she doesn't need to be, she behaves really well. She's a good girl, but she'll urinate when you have to sort of discipline her, or even when she looks at her.
Okay, we lost you there, but I think we have the gist. Dr. O'Loughlin.
So it sounds like she is a submissive urinator. So, you know, dogs that do that because they They're just a little shy. They feel intimidated by the person who is sort of standing over them. So
yeah.
A couple of things. I'm sorry?
Yep.
Go ahead.
So a couple of things I recommend with submissive urination is you want to try and build up the dog's self-esteem. And one of the best ways to do that is to get them into some sort of obedience class. Because, you know, teaching them to do commands and listen and sort of perform in front of a group helps build up their self-esteem. And then the other thing is when you are approaching the dog, to try and not sort of stand over them, towering over them, you know, maybe get down on more on their level and talk to them on their level. It's not so scary for them.
Doesn't do it really with me or... Just kind of, she's getting better with my husband because he's been walking her twice a day, and she really has bonded with him more, and it's not happening as much. So it is. Do you think she could outgrow it, even with just doing things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the more she gets settled into the home, they often will outgrow it.
All right, well, that is where we will have to leave it. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, how do people find out more about Del Mar Animal Hospital?
Our website, DelmarAnimalHospital.com.
All right. Well, beautiful job. And I know it's a little difficult navigating the show when you're not in the studio and the guests and the callers are on the phone as well. But you did great. So thanks. We'll talk to you next time.
Sounds good, Ray. Take care.
See ya. Support comes from Kent Hicks Construction Company, featuring East Branch Homes, a new division of hybrid prefab homes that are net zero ready and low in embodied carbon. Traditional to modern styles available, eastbranchhomes.com. Mother Earth Storehouse, open 7 days, working to help keep our communities safe and supplied with EDC goods and services, serving the Hudson Valley with organic and all-natural foods since 1978. MotherEarthStorehouse.com. Well, that's it for today on Vox Pop. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for the great calls. Apologies if you didn't get through or your email didn't get read. We'll do this again very soon. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered today by Matt Plummer. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Oh, you know, there was a heck of a big bolide, a big meteor that flew through the air this morning. You saw it in Ohio, Kentucky, places like that. I don't think you saw it around here, but we'll talk about that tomorrow at 2 p.m. We will welcome back our resident astronomers and talk astronomy with you. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for 51%.